Today on Rockin' the Suburbs,
we talk Southern Rock.
Ooh, excellent. Molly Hatchet, Black Oak, Arkansas, Black Crows, Skynyrd, and 38 Special.
Well, yeah, those are Southern Rock bands, but we're going to talk about a different kind of good old boy. Okay, Patrick.
Yes, Jim.
We haven't done a band interview in a while.
No, we haven't.
It's been a little while, but we got one set up a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, we did.
At the Songbird.
Yep.
It's a venue in D.C. It's a really interesting venue. If anybody visits D.C.,
yeah.
It really feels like you're like in somebody's basement.
It is. When you watch your show. Like the basement of a frat house. It's
yes,
cool.
It's great.
It's got a great vibe.
So we love that. So thank you to the Songbird because they helped us out and, you know, given us a spot to do the interview and all of that. But what I wanted to say here is that I know this was somebody you really, really wanted to meet and interview, right?
I did, yeah. And it was one of those cases of like, wow, this is going to be so incredible. And then when the time comes, you're like, I'm so nervous to actually talk to this guy. But he turned out to be such a down-to-earth, incredible person. And so Lee Baines III, he fronts a band called The Glory Fires. Mm-hmm. And as anyone who regularly listens to this show every day knows that our good friend Doug Mulvihill turned us on to their album, Youth Detention.
Right.
Became my favorite album. I got obsessed with it, too. It was my favorite album from last year. And just, you know, the incredible combination of, like, really hard punk rock with a little bit of Southern influence because the band comes from Alabama.
And they really embrace that.
They really do.
Yeah.
Yeah, their identity is super important to them.
Right.
And also his lyrics. You know, he's very literate and not in a... not in like a poetry of the working Southern man kind of way, but much more about individuals and their sort of daily battles and what they go through in identifying with being Southern. And so it's just really intoxicating combination of stuff. And I really think they hit their stride. They had two previous albums that came out on Sub Pop, but for this one, they just took it to a whole different level. You know, it's really kind of a triumph for them altogether. So not only did we want to talk to Lee, but we wanted to see him play.
Yes.
Because I've watched so many YouTube videos of the band like ripping it up. So,
all right. So why don't we get into the Lee Baines interview? This is part one. We actually divide this up into three parts.
Three parts.
So you're going to hear it over the course of the next 3 days. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And let's get into the interview with Lee Baines. So, Lee, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
How long have you guys been on the road? This time. Yeah.
A little over 3 weeks this trip. But we've been on tour a lot in 2018.
Right.
So really the last year. But.
Yeah. So catch us up a little bit about what the band's been doing since Youth Detention came out about a year ago, right?
Yep.
Now?
Yep.
Tremendous album. My favorite album of 2017.
Oh, man,
as
thank
the
you.
Listeners to this podcast will have heard me rant about.
Yeah, we've talked about it before on the show.
So plenty of times.
I appreciate y'all doing that.
Absolutely. So talk about what you guys have been doing. Has it just been touring?
For the last year, it's been a lot of touring. And then other than that, like I've been writing a lot for, you know, whatever's coming up next. Yeah. And then I've been doing more solo shows as well, which I haven't done in the past.
Interesting.
But I would have, you know, I've just had some people like places where we play a lot be like, man, you know, if you're ever interested in just coming and playing by yourself, we'd have you. So I've been doing a little bit more of that, which has been pretty interesting. I've enjoyed it more than I thought that I would.
Yeah. So let me tell you a little bit about how Jim and I and our Rock in the Suburbs community learned about Youth Detention and your music. We had I have an old friend who I know back from the the 80s and 90s when I was probably your age and going to a lot of shows. And he's a loyal listener, and he wrote in one day and said, you got to hear this. He's Detention, Lee Bands and the Glory Friars. And so it became kind of a thing with us. We all kind of got really into it. His name's Doug Mulvihill. Shout out to Doug Mulvihill. He lives in Richmond. I think he's going to try to see you guys tomorrow at Hardywood Park. But
awesome.
He wrote up I asked him if he had any questions, and of course he fired off a bunch.
Nice.
But this one fits right in with what you're just talking about. So let me read that to you and have you answer. He says, you have an approach to the band that seems very workmanlike, which reminds me of Bob Mould. That is a job to be taken very seriously. It's obviously what you do for a living, but do you see the band as a job similar to any other common profession?
That's a great question. And that's something that's been interesting to me over the last few years, is like looking at art as work, because I think growing up, I had the idea that it wasn't work. Like it wasn't like it was, like work was something that was like valuable and like important, and that art was kind of folly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But it may be partly because of that, like that has driven me to like work really hard at songwriting and then also with touring, you know, and stuff. And, and then more over the last couple of 3 years, and I would say like with writing Youth Detention, I started conceiving of, you know, writing songs as labor, you know, and as work, and as something that, required, you know, elbow grease kind of thing, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, there's the writer Rick Bragg, you know, mm-hmm. the nonfiction writer. And I remember reading an essay by him one time that was, it was something to the effect of like against the muse. And he was like, perturbed by the concept of the muse. Right. And he was like, no, it's like, you know, inspiration or creativity or whatever isn't a spigot that you can turn on and off. It's like I have to get up every day and work at it, whether I feel inspired or not. Right. You know, and that's
instead
definitely
of waiting for it to come to you, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's totally how I've approached it. And and I think that we as a band definitely look at it playing and touring that way. You know, it's like particularly, I guess, being, you know, from a place where it's like you know it's like if you can play shows in Birmingham or where I live in Atlanta, like you can play, you know, every couple of 3 weeks, but it's like nobody in New York or DC or Chicago or Nebraska or whatever is ever gonna find out about that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, because there's, you know, it's not like somebody's going to be at the show and write it up and do whatever. Yeah. So it's like, if you want people to hear the music, like you have to take it to them kind of thing. You know what I mean? And I'm really fortunate that like all three of the guys in the band are regard touring in that same kind of work, mm-hmm. you know, work like way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about Southern identity, because I know that's a big theme in your music.
Yeah.
You grew up in Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. I grew up in the Midwest. I grew up in Ohio.
Okay.
But I did, when I was later in life, I did, as an adult, move to Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
And I lived there for 10 years. And it was a curious thing for me to try to see how Northerners then sort of looked at Southerners by virtue of living in the South then, you know, because when you would tell people I live in Kentucky, they'd be like, why? Right. Why would you move to Kentucky? You know? Right. And I'd be like, no, it's Louisville. It's really cool. And they just couldn't get over that. Right.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about, from your perspective, you know, what does it mean to you, I guess, to be a Southerner today, or what was your, you know, sort of upbringing like, and what were the things that you were, that you look back on now that say, like, the way I was brought up sort of defines me, or I had to work to sort of reject that in some ways. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a good question, but a really complicated one, I guess, for me. So, you know, it's interesting, like, because writing so much around identity and cultural identity and Southernness and stuff like that, I wind up in a lot of conversations with people about that.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, I feel like everybody kind of has a story of, like, when they realized that they were Southern, you know what I mean? Like, and I guess for me, like, I grew up always knowing that because it was talked about in my family a lot.
In what way?
In that, well, you know, my parents and grandparents and extended family talked about, like, that we were Southern, and because we were Southern, blah, blah, blah. You know, and it's like they would talk about the Civil War and about the Civil Rights Movement and all these sort of, like, defining moments and struggles in the South. And my dad in particular is like kind of a student of Southern political history. And okay. My mom is like really into Southern literature. And so, you know, it's like there was, and, you know, I had, you know, people in my family who were totally of the, you know, kind of lost cause, you know, Confederate idea that, like, you know, this was a, you know, these were like noble people fighting for their land and their heritage and culture and all that stuff. So it's like, but then at the same time, like, I grew up in Birmingham, like on the, you know, civil rights battleground, you know, and knew people who had lived, you know, under Jim Crow and who had been sprayed by the hoses and bit by the dogs. You know what I'm saying? So right. It's like, I never remember not being conscious of the fact that I was Southern, you know what I mean? But I guess like what was complicated was figuring out what the hell that means,
right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm still figuring that out, you know? And
yeah.
I think the thing that I've settled on, at least the baseline, is that it's different for every Southerner. The South is different, you know what I mean? And, so that's, and that's, in my writing, I really focus on my personal experience and context and environment and perspective, because I can't speak to the South because all I know is my experience of it, you know.
Well, so. And I think that voice is important. And it's the same thing with like a guy like Patterson Hood or somebody like that, because it maybe breaks through some of the stereotypes that people have of the South, right? And I think that's important for people to understand that. Because people in the North or, you know, the Midwest or the West Coast or whatever just tend to think that the South is this homogenous
totally
thing, and everybody sort of thinks the same way, right?
Sure. Yeah, totally. And I think that's such a natural conclusion to that, like, kind of you know, binary way of thinking, or like the you know, self and the other, you know. I mean, I feel like that growing up, I probably did that with like the idea of the North, quote unquote. And it's like on this tour going, you know, we went up through like the Midwest, like Iowa and Wisconsin, and then like up along the Great Lakes and up New England. And it's like none of those places are the same. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like they're all different from one another.
Right.
It's interesting like how flattening that process is, like the othering, you know, like this is us and that's them. It's like it erases so much nuance and richness and humanity in people, you know.
So one more thing. So yeah. On the same line. So do you think that you and your band have a mission statement? Is there something you're trying to do beyond just, you know, rock out, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, I for sure have a sense of mission, I guess. I don't know that I've ever verbalized it super clearly, but I think it is to speak to structures and systems of power and erasure and my role in that and my place in that, you know, and try to do that in an authentic, honest, you know, and hopefully like beautiful and truthful way, yeah. You know.
I would say you're doing that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
One last thing. Yeah. Do you get a different reaction from audiences in, you know, Alabama, Georgia than you do in like Iowa, Wisconsin?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of hard to say, man. It's like, that's hard for me to gauge, I guess, really.
Okay.
I will say, like, one thing that I think is really cool is that sometimes when people, like, talk to me at a show about, like, a record or something, or a song, what's, like, really powerful to me is when folks relate it to their personal experience and context, you know? And so, like, this year we went to continental Europe for the first time, and there were a couple of conversations I had in Spain, one with a fellow from the Basque country and one with a fellow from Catalonia.
Ah, interesting.
And they were both relating their experiences in those places, you know, in relationship to Spain and in relationship to, you know, the, you know, just kind of a global politics and economics in a way that was specific to them, but, you know, related to the songs, which I thought was, like, really cool, you know. And then had a similar conversation with a fellow from Milwaukee on this tour, you know.
Yeah.
And a guy from a small town in Illinois, you know, who, you know, yeah, saw pieces of their own experience in the songs. And, like, that's like the most that I could hope for, you know, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
So building on that, and also the fact that, you know, sociopolitical issues bubble very close to the surface in youth detention, what does it feel like playing in D.C.? Does it feel different when you come here? Do you feel like you have to do something a little different? Because I think, you know, Jim and I have seeing shows here, it seems like, oh, this band's coming to D.C. This is where they're going to break out their political speech.
You know, oh, really? Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, just from growing up here, you always would see it. Like, sure, this is where I'm going to make my statement tonight.
Because, right,
you know, all the government workers are going to be there. Right? So does it feel any different to you
when
you
awesome. Come here? Man, I don't know. I really do love coming here.
Do you?
I do, yeah. It's one of, I don't know. And I guess I would group, like, I loved all the Discord bands and all that.
Yeah.
You know, that
totally.
That's like a huge, huge influence on my ethos and mm-hmm. everything. So, but it's, I do appreciate the fact that, like, so many of the folks we've gotten to meet here are, like, really engaged in the work that
yeah.
is so critical right now. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I just, you know, I get pretty fired up about being here in the midst of that.
Okay, so tying into a little bit about what we talked about in yesterday's episode.
Yeah.
So Lee has an affinity for Fugazi, I think, in particular,
does,
and a lot
yeah.
of the Discord bands. And when we saw the show after we did this interview, he actually even, you know, mentioned Fugazi from the stage.
He
something
did.
About
yeah.
this, he never got to see them, but, you know, sort of he was excited to be in D.C. and sort of the place, you know, where Fugazi was born and
exactly,
played and
right.
all that, right?
Yeah, and their work ethic and kind of the way they, you know, just did things, put things together, and also had a political side to them, but weren't overtly political. And I think that kind of squares with some of the stuff Lee does, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's not writing you know, direct protest songs, but they're yeah. always present in
yeah.
his music. Yeah. So I thought that was really cool. And he's, you know, as we will hear later in the week, he's a guy that takes this very seriously. It's a job to him, and he clocks in every day and goes mm-hmm. to work and works really hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's apparent
yeah,
when you
absolutely.
Listen to the music
mm-hmm. and you talk to him.
All right, very good. So you'll want to tune in
every day.
Every day. Mm-hmm. You'll hear more from Lee Baines tomorrow and the next day.
Yep.
So our thanks again to Lee. The way you can hear the show is on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Play or other big podcast platforms.
Yeah.
If you want to comment at all about Lee Baines, if you're familiar with his music, we would love to hear from you
mm-hmm.
or really anything music related. You
yep.
can call and leave a message, 612-440-1984. There you go. And then you leave a message there, and then we get your voice on a future episode.
Yeah.
Or email rock@suburbspod.com or hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram,
mm-hmm.
all at Suburbs Pod. All right.
All right.
Let's get on to day two.
Cool.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
He was perturbed by the concept of the muse. Right.